All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. Today's a throwback episode, but before we get started, I wanted to let you know I'm going to be in California tomorrow for a film release through my day job at Athletic Brewing. If you are at all in the San Diego, Oceanside, LA area, please come down. If you're a listener of the show, I'll pay your ticket. I'd love for you to go. It's going to be from 3:30 to 5:30, kind of early, because the people that will be going, a lot of them will be racing in the Oceanside Ironman the next morning, so we don't want to, you know, have them out too late. But if you want more details, just go to athleticbrewing.com or go to our Instagram, and you can see the film trailer, where to get tickets, and yeah, or just reach out to me, Mason@adventuresportspodcast.com. They are selling, so you know, they might sell out. I think we probably have the room though, but please, if you're in the area, come down. But also, this episode is really cool. You know, George Karunas is a well-known person on TV figure. He's done a lot in TV and documentaries and has gone all around the world. Global exploration and loves storm chasing, loves exploring volcanoes. We've had him on a couple times, but this episode's from 2015. So crazy to think that this is almost a 10-year episode. So we're throwing it way back. Travis was hosting at the time, and so but he's a great storyteller and is still taking people on really cool trips. I think his most recent upcoming trip is going to be to Greenland. So the dude's still going at it all these years later. So we'll have to have him back on and tell some of these stories, but I just wanted to let you know. So pretty cool. So let's go ahead and dive into this 9-year-old episode and hear from a legend, George Karunas. All right.
A life full of adventure doesn't always involve sports. George Karunas is with me today to discuss just how true this is. George has been a storm chaser since 1997 and has been documenting tornadoes, hurricanes, blizzards, floods, hail, lightning, and much, much more for the Angry Planet TV series as well as the National Geographic Channel. He's found himself hanging inside active volcanoes in Ethiopia and filming on the edge of molten lava lakes with only his protective heat suit between him and the 2,000-degree molten rock below. If that's not enough adventure, George has also spent his time documenting great white sharks, forest fires, and even mountain gorillas in Rwanda. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Travis. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. So I read a few things off, but man, you've done so much more than that. You've been buried in snow caves. You've sailed around the tip of South America, visited boiling lakes, witnessed avalanches in the Dolomites. You've even been to Timbuktu.
I have.
Shouldn't you be satisfied once you've been to Timbuktu?
You'd think. You know, I actually have a Timbuktu stamp in my passport, believe it or not. That's a rare thing, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just a world of adventure out there. There's so much to see and so much to do. And basically what I do is I specialize in documenting extreme forces of nature. So whenever there's some kind of natural force going on, I don't always like to call them disasters because they only turn into disasters when we humans get in the way. But natural disasters and forces of nature, basically anything that Mother Nature has in her arsenal that is capable of killing you, I'm usually not too far away with a camera rolling.
Well, that's definitely an adventure in and of itself. And we typically delve into the adventure sports specifically. But when I was watching some of your stuff on Angry Planet, I was just amazed, you know, at the stuff that you do. And I'm thinking, this is adventure. You know, you don't have to be doing sports to have an adventure. So I think you're the epitome of adventure out there doing all of these things. And you're really out there in the thick of it doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I tallied it up just the other day, and just in the past year alone, I think I've spent 217 nights away from home traveling to places such as, oh man, Newfoundland and Bangladesh and Siberia, Laos, Vanuatu and Australia and Tuvalu and Cape Verde Islands and the Brazilian Amazon, just all these different amazing places. And each place I go to is always going to be something completely different.
Man, that is awesome. So take a little time and tell us, how did you end up doing this? Were you just this adventurous kid and thought, man, I'm just going to run around the world and document crazy storms? Or did you accidentally slip into it? How did you get started?
It's sort of a weird, convoluted path. A lot of people think that it's a straight line, but it could be sort of couldn't be any farther from the truth. However, when I look back, it sort of does make a certain amount of sense. When I was a kid, I was always fascinated with ocean exploration. Jacques Cousteau was my hero. I kind of wanted to be a marine biologist. So I always had an interest in nature and science and the outside world and the wildness of nature. And I remember as a kid swimming in a flooded creek nearby when there was a big rainstorm and riding my bicycle through hailstorms when I was a kid and getting yelled at by my mom and, you know, giving her more gray hairs. And I haven't stopped giving her gray hairs after 45 years of doing just stupid things. But I eventually got into music because that's the way you meet girls, right?
Of course.
Once you hit puberty, then you start thinking about other things. So I started studying music, and I went to university to study music, and then I switched to audio engineering, and I spent years working in recording studios and playing in bands, and that was all fun. And basically, I ended up working in a studio here in Toronto that did sound for film and television. So I got to learn a lot about how the business of television worked and how production worked and the lingo and the language of television. And then once I hit about the age of 27, I really started to itch to get back into the things that I loved as a kid and getting into nature and such. And I got my first real good camera and I started taking photographs of lightning during summer thunderstorms. And things just kept snowballing. And I would take my extra time off. I would bank my overtime at the studio I was working at, and I would take time off for free, like unpaid time off, and go storm chasing. Saw my first tornado in 1998 and got totally hooked into doing that every year. And it just kept going until I developed this reputation for being the guy that was always on the scene when all hell was breaking loose somewhere. And I kept getting phone calls from BBC and CNN and various different news agencies, and documentary filmmakers would call me to interview me for their programs. And next thing I know, I'm getting a tap on the shoulder to start up basically my own TV show about my life. So it's a great day when you have to quit a job that you like to go and do something you're absolutely passionate about.
Yeah, no kidding. What a great story.
It was really amazing. I remember it was a Friday afternoon. I was working late at the studio. I get a phone call. It was a TV producer who read about me in the newspaper not long after Hurricane Katrina. And I was in the middle of Hurricane Katrina in Gulfport, Mississippi, which was extremely hard hit, harder hit than New Orleans. And that story sort of got out about what I experienced there. And the newspaper clipping sat on his desk for a long, long time. And then he sort of found it one day and thought, oh, yeah, I forgot to call this guy. He called me up that Friday sort of evening, and we put together a meeting, and next thing we know, we're pitching the idea to various TV networks, and one of them said yes, the Outdoor Life Network here in Canada. And originally, the show was only going to be 6 episodes. They came back and said, we want to do the show, but can you do 13 of them instead of 6? I said, okay. Then we did another 13. Then we did another 13. We just finished episode number 49 just last month.
Wow. Wow, good for you. You make a fantastic host. Your enthusiasm for this kind of work and this lifestyle just leaps out of you as you're watching the TV shows. You do a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate you using the word enthusiasm, because I'm not the most photogenic guy in the world. I'm not the most I'm not the prettiest. I'm not the richest. I'm not the, I'm just like an average guy, but enthusiasm really goes a long way, and I'm really enthusiastic, and I just love doing this stuff. And I do it even when it's costing me money. I go on expeditions when I'm not filming the TV show, just because I love to do this kind of stuff. And I'm glad that you appreciate that, because I really hope that it does come through. A lot of the places that I go to, like Siberia in the middle of the winter, or going to Timbuktu in the Sahara Desert. These are places that not many people would want to go to themselves, because it's so difficult and dangerous and just such a pain to go to some of these places, but they want to see them. So I take on that burden gleefully. I take on that burden of all the challenge and the difficulty and dealing with the politics and permissions and permits and the hardships and the climate and the equipment and documenting all of this so that people can enjoy some of these spots on this wonderful planet that we have that very few people get to see with their own eyes.
Yeah, and it's amazing to watch that stuff and live it through your camera lens. My son absolutely loves watching these shows, and he's got his heart set on being a storm chaser. He's 11 years old now, and he's imagining the vehicle that he's going to build to go intercept tornadoes. And I told him I was going to have you on. He was just enthusiastic. He can't wait to hear the episode. So what would you say to him at 11 years old if he wants to be a storm chaser?
Oh, that is so awesome. The best thing that he can do is just keep reading and studying and learning more and more. And when he gets a little bit older, you're going to hate to hear this, but when he gets a little bit older, I actually work with a tornado chasing tour company. So we take people from all over the world who don't have experience with chasing storms, and we take them out for 2 weeks at a time across Oklahoma and Kansas and Nebraska, and they get to experience what it's like to live the lifestyle of a real storm chaser for 2 weeks at a time.
Wow, that is cool. I had no idea that existed.
It does. There's a few companies, small companies that do it. The one that I work with is cloud9tours.com, and I've been working with them now for 12 years. And let me tell you, it is just, we have a good time all the time. It's an interesting vacation. The scenery in Kansas is not that interesting. If you like watching a dog run away for 3 days because it's so flat, but the sky is what changes all the time. And when supercell thunderstorms that form these tornadoes, when they go up, some of these storms can be close to twice the height of Mount Everest. You can't fly a jetliner over top of these things. They're so huge. And all that energy and that rotation is just concentrated on this one spot in a farmer's field that's being ground up by this tornado. And being up close to that, close enough to be able to hear it, oh, it really makes you feel small. And it's just so awe-inspiring to see that. And, of course, it can be tricky and dangerous, so there's always that thrill element in there as well.
Yeah, I guess if you ever want to be humbled, you just go out there and chase a couple of storms and find out what it is.
She'll smack you down without thought, right? If you don't know what you're doing, like I've been doing this for, oh my God, I've lost track of the number of years. I've been a tornado chaser now for 18 years. If you don't know what you're doing, you're either going to A, not see anything because you don't know how to do the proper weather forecast and you'll be 200 miles away, or you can get yourself into some real serious trouble. I was on the El Reno, Oklahoma tornado a couple of years ago on May 31st, 2013, and this was the world record largest tornado ever witnessed. It was 2.6 miles wide at its widest
point. Holy cow.
And it killed three colleagues of mine, actually, that were on the other side of the tornado. We didn't know it at the time, but the thing was so huge that it didn't even look like a tornado. It was just a smudge on the landscape, just on the horizon, this dark mass.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And it was just ugly and violent. Sometimes they're pretty. You get this beautiful white side-lit tornado. Sometimes a rainbow beside it. And they can be these wonderful works of nature's art. But sometimes they can be dark and dangerous and just menacing.
Yeah, just an ugly mass of destruction. Absolutely. I remember my son telling me about that tornado 2.5 miles wide. He said, "Dad, the biggest tornado out there they've ever recorded is 2.5 miles wide." And I can't even imagine that. 2.5 miles is a long way.
Exactly. And there were some – I was on the radio warning some of my storm chaser friends who were south of me because I knew their position. And I knew from where they weren't going to be able to see it as clearly as I could from my position. And I warned them that there was a large tornado headed their way, and they couldn't even see it. They're looking right at the storm, and they couldn't even see it because it was wrapped up in rain and such. And so they saw a few what looked like funnels, but they were actually these little suction vortices that were orbiting around the larger circulation. It was 2.5 miles wide. So even the professionals, you know, looking at that day, had a hard time understanding what was going on because it was just so incredibly huge.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, I grew up in New England, and out there, as you know, it's on that side of the country, the continent for that matter, it's so hilly and there's trees everywhere, so you don't really get to see the storms approaching. You don't see the storm until it's pretty much overhead. And when I moved out to Colorado, the most fascinating thing to me was watching the electrical storms out on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
And watching them come in for hours on end, you know, and where I was, you know, there's no issues, but you're just watching this thing approach. And it was just the most fascinating thing to sit there and watch that.
Yeah. And people don't think that Colorado gets tornadoes because they think all, you know, Rocky Mountains is what they think. But the eastern third of Colorado is extremely flat. And it's definitely part of Tornado Alley. I spent a lot of time in places like Sterling and Trinidad and all these places where they get quite a few tornadoes. One of the best tornadoes I've ever seen was in southeastern Colorado.
Yeah, that's no doubt. I live in Boulder County, and just to the north of us. In fact, I was out on my motorcycle that night. This was only a few months back, and got caught out when the tornado hit, and it actually took out some houses and whatnot. But it was right up against the foothills, which I've never seen before. Usually, they have to be out on the east side of the interstate of I-25. To be anything that makes damage, and this thing came right up against the foothills, and it was really a sight to see out there, being that close to the mountains like that.
Oh, there was one that was reported some 12,000 feet up the side of Pike's Peak a couple of years ago.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, you're surprised.
I've not heard of that.
These things can form. Yeah, that's why I find them so fascinating. It's so interesting because they're literally just these whirlpools of water vapor that come and go due to a certain balance of different elements in the atmosphere, and they're so fleeting, and trying to be in exactly the right place at exactly the right time is a tremendous challenge. So it's very personally rewarding when we're successful at doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit more about volcanoes. Now, I alluded to your enthusiasm. Now, I have to mention, you have so much enthusiasm about this stuff, and specifically volcanoes, that you chose to get married on one?
Yep, absolutely. Not just married on a volcano, but one that was actively exploding. That was an interesting marriage proposal.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was her birthday, and we went to our favorite restaurant. And as dessert came, I got down on one knee. And, of course, we have TV cameras rolling. I lied to her and told her that the TV cameras were there because the producers wanted some backstory on us just for the show. So I didn't tell her that she didn't know that I was about to propose. So get down on one knee and ask her if she wanted to get married. And she said, yes, we've been together for 9 years at that point. So we figured it was time. She was surprised though. And then of course, to sweeten the pot, I proposed to her that we get married on the crater's edge, a beautiful tropical South Pacific island. So now, of course, her ears have perked up and she's even more interested. And then I sort of sneak in there, how about on the crater's edge of an exploding volcano? And she actually said yes to the volcano part of the question faster than she did to the will you marry me part of the question. And then 6 months later, we find ourselves flying out to the other side of the planet to a small island nation called Vanuatu. I've been there numerous times now. It's full of volcanoes. And there's one in particular called Yasser Volcano on Tanna Island. No one's ever heard of this place, but there's a volcano there that erupts every 5 minutes for the past 800 years.
No kidding.
So it's very reliable, and that's why I chose that one. I know it's going to keep erupting, and there's no chance that it's going to stop because it always, always erupts. And it's relatively small, so it's easy to climb. So there we are. I've got my tuxedo on. She's got her wedding dress on. We're climbing the side. I'm feeling very much like James Bond at this moment in a tuxedo on the side of an exploding volcano. And then we had the ceremony right there on the crater's edge. We filmed the whole thing. There were the locals performing the legal ceremony with grass skirts and feathers in their hair and face paint. And it was just magical.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. Are you looking to sell anything at all online? Well, I would advise you to look into Shopify. They are a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. I use Shopify every day at my day job. It has been with us since our company was a tiny little team all the way up to where we are today, one of the biggest breweries in the country. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel, selling sleek skis, or selling non-alcoholic beer like we are at Athletic Brewing, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their personal POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. We manage a podcast, a blog, all that right there on our Shopify store. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and has extensive help resources whenever you're dealing with an obstacle. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ASP, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ASP.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
Wow, if you could lie to a woman about the proposal, telling her the cameras are there for something else, and propose that you get married on an exploding volcano, and she sticks with you.
Yes.
That's worth hanging on to.
Well, she's very cool. She's very understanding. She has to be married to me.
I guess.
And I could literally call her right now and say, honey, I've got to go to the airport. I have to go to the moon. And she'd say, okay, bring me back something nice.
I want a souvenir.
Yeah, and she'd be cool with that. I mean, I'm very grateful that my family and my wife have all been very supportive. I'm away so much, and the things that I do are sometimes inherently very dangerous, and I promise to keep coming back in one piece. But it was really amazing as we're finishing up the ceremony and we pop the cork on the bottle of champagne. The champagne comes shooting out, and the volcano has one last salvo of an eruption, shooting molten lava hundreds of yards in the air. It was just a beautiful, beautiful thing to see, and sort of a bit of a metaphor for marriage itself.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Well, that paints a fantastic picture.
And 2 days before the ceremony, I actually rappelled 60 meters down inside the volcano and had to dodge pieces of lava that were flying through the air over my head.
Well, I would say that's adventure.
That's adventure. Yes. Don't try this at home, folks.
Well, now that you bring that up, how about a story of your most amazing experience in your time doing this?
Oh, there's been so many. The one time that I was the most filled with awe, like jaw-dropping awe, was on a caving expedition that I did a few years ago in Mexico. There's a place called Naica. And it was only recently discovered. There's a silver mine in north central Mexico. And there were miners that were 900 feet underground, and they accidentally broke into a chamber. This chamber was about the size of a basketball court, and it was filled with the largest crystals that anyone has ever seen. These white selenite gypsum crystals. Some of them were 30 feet long and weigh 55 tons.
Wow.
Totally like something out of a science fiction movie, like Superman's Fortress of Solitude. And I just Google Naica, N-A-I-C-A, and you will be blown away by this place. And So I had the opportunity to go there. It's very tightly controlled. It took 2 years to get permission to go there for one day. And the environment inside the cave is as deadly as the cave is beautiful. The air temperature inside is about 126 degrees Fahrenheit with almost 100% humidity.
Wow.
So as soon as you walk inside the cave, the humidity hits you in the face like a sledgehammer. And you literally start dying because your body cannot shed your internal heat because the air is hotter than your skin. So you're absorbing heat. Plus the humidity is so high that you sweat, but it doesn't evaporate. So that natural evaporative cooling effect that your body has doesn't function. So you're basically about to get heat stroke. And without any kind of special clothing, you can survive inside for 15 or 20 minutes. We had special ice-filled suits with a special backpack filled with ice canisters that went up to through a hose to a fighter pilot-style mask that allowed me to breathe chilled air and blew sort of chilled air onto my eyes to keep my eyes from getting scorched.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And even with all this gear, I could still only go inside for about 35 to 40 minutes at a time before all the ice melted. And then we'd have to leave, take everything off, put them into freezers, and just all this preparation. You're totally drained, so you drink about a gallon of Mexican tap water. And then you go back inside for another 40 minutes, about an hour and a half later, once you've rested a little bit. And 2 years of preparation to go in there for one day, and it was totally worth it. It was just the most beautiful place, just this chamber of gigantic crystals that are so big, they're like tree trunks, and you're climbing over top of them. Amazing.
Yeah, I saw those. You guys did an Angry Planet episode on those, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, those are amazing.
It's funny because I remember the very first time I ever saw a photograph of that place. It was given to me by a caving friend who showed it to me out in Alberta one time years ago. And the millisecond that I saw the first photograph, I knew that I was going to go there. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, but I knew that it was going to happen. And it just took years and years and years of perseverance, but it did happen, and it was amazing.
Well, it sounds like it was absolutely worth it.
Completely. It's interesting because the place is sealed off completely now. You can't even go in there as a researcher or a filmmaker. And the cave itself is below the water table. They actually have gigantic pumps that they use to pump water, the groundwater, out of the mine. And at some point, the mine is going to run out of silver. We don't know when, but at some point, all mines run out of ore. When they do, at some point, they'll end up shutting off the pumps, and the cave and the whole mine will flood with water, and we'll never see it again.
Wow. It'll be generations way in the future might rediscover it, just like you
maybe,
did.
Yeah. Who knows what's down there?
Cool. Huh. That's crazy. So you keep coming home. That's a good thing.
That's good.
But is there a time when things just really went haywire and you were wondering if you were going to make it home?
Oh. I've got a couple of many times. One of the craziest things I've ever done was I was leading an expedition for National Geographic about a year and a half ago to the country of Turkmenistan, which no one has ever heard of, or very few people. It's one of the former Soviet republics. It borders with Afghanistan and Iran. And it's just north of there. And there's a lot of natural gas. So they were drilling for natural gas one year. And the drilling rig collapsed into a sinkhole that was about 100 feet deep and 230 feet across. And it was leaking this methane. You know, natural gas is methane. So it's leaking this methane gas. So they lit it on fire thinking it would burn in a couple of days, burn off. And that was in 1971. And it's still burning.
Oh, man.
So my mission with National Geographic was to go there. I had a grant from the National Geographic Society, a science grant, to go there and gather soil samples from the bottom of this burning crater called Darvaza. The locals call it the doorway to hell. And it looks like a volcano, but it's burning methane gas, thousands of fires inside this pit. And my mission was to go there, collect soil samples, and then have the DNA, do a DNA analysis on the soil to see if there's any kind of bacteria living down there. And that would give us sort of an idea as to the possibility of life on planets outside of our solar system that have a similar hot methane-rich environment. And there are planets that have that. So it's sort of looking for alien life here on Earth. So that was a real interesting thing. But to do that, one has to get to the bottom of this giant burning crater.
Right.
And to get, you know, to gather these samples. So this also took about 2 years of preparation to get permission from the government. It's very closed off. It's kind of like working in North Korea. It's very much like that. More people visit North Korea than visit Turkmenistan. About 3 times the number every year.
That's saying something.
It really is. Nobody goes here. So we spent a week out in the desert, camped out, and I had special fireproof, fire-resistant ropes that we stretched across the entire span, 230 feet across this crater. And I have this special thermal protective heat suit, this silver sort of aluminized suit that you would wear in a steel mill. And that, plus a self-contained breathing tank, all of these different sensors and equipment. And I went out on pulleys on the cross of this rope out to the very center, dangling above this burning pit from a hell, and then rappelled down in the middle of the open air down to the very center of the pit, and was able to gather samples. And as I was digging in the ground to gather the samples, fire was coming out of the hole that I was digging. It was literally like I describe it as being like standing in the middle of a coliseum of fire. And I only had 15 minutes worth of air. So I'm doing all this stuff as quickly as I can. I've got this special temperature probe. I'm taking temperature readings. I'm shooting video. I'm gathering samples. My air quality alarm starts going off. A few minutes later, my low air on my tank alarm starts going off. So all these alarms are going off. And it's like, okay, it's time to go. I don't want to get trapped down here. And I gave the signal to my crew up top to haul me up and out. And I'm starting to get really lightheaded, and I'm on the verge of passing out at this point. But they were able to haul me out. It was just an unbelievable thing. And we were successful. We found bacteria down there that did not exist in the existing DNA database. So we actually were able to find life in the place that you would not expect. It was so hellish and just so inhospitable down there.
Amazing. Wow, that's cool. And, mission success.
Yeah, absolutely. And to put things in perspective, 12 people have stood on the surface of the moon. Only one person has been to the bottom of that crater.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Man, that's a claim to fame right there.
Yeah, I was very proud of that. And it just took awesome. So much effort. And it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done from a political standpoint, from an organizational standpoint. And I tell you, when you're standing on the edge of that thing, there's so much heat coming off of it. It's so intimidating. And then to just step off into the void and put all of your weight on that rope, that takes a lot of trust.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, and knowing that no one has ever done it before, so there's no precedent. We didn't know how hot it was at the bottom. We didn't know what kind of gas there was. We didn't know all these things that I might encounter down there because no one had ever done it before. It was a truly unique environment.
So would that rank as the coolest place you visited or the scariest?
Certainly the scariest. Certainly the scariest. It's not the scariest. It's not the most frightened I've ever been. But fear and I have an interesting relationship. I respect fear. I'm not without fear. People say to me frequently, oh, you must be totally fearless. And I answer them honestly, no. I embrace fear because if I don't have fear, that's when I make mistakes.
Right.
If I experience
Absolutely.
Fear, that means that I need to take action. So for me, it's an action call. If I'm afraid, then something's wrong and I need to do something about this. And if I don't have that, then I'm going to be complacent. I'm going to make mistakes. And I've had that happen before. I've been complacent and I've made mistakes and they have almost cost me very dearly.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have fear, there's something seriously wrong with you. It's a human emotion, and it's one that is there to give you the signals.
Exactly.
It's for survival.
Yeah, it's there for a reason. It's part of your survival instinct. When I start losing my survival instinct, that's when I know it's time for me to retire.
Exactly. You might want to take up a new career.
Well, I was in a cave in Kenya, another caving incident. And this cave is known for two reasons. Number one, elephants go inside the cave and scrape the cave walls to chew the rocks to get salt in their diet. It's a very unique behavior. But also it was the epicenter for two outbreaks of an Ebola-type virus called Marburg hemorrhagic fever, and it's spread by the bats that live in this cave. And basically, to make a long story short, I was in there with a bat biologist, and there were thousands of bats flying past us, and I had protective surgical gloves, and I had a respirator on, Tyvek coveralls, eye protection, helmet. And I grab one of these bats, and I go to show the camera, and the bat bites through my surgical glove and into my thumb.
Oh,
and
man.
Now I don't know if I've caught this Ebola-type virus. I don't know if I've got a week and a half left to live before my internal organs turn to jello and I start bleeding out of my eyes. Things like that. So, you know, another day.
I'm just sitting here in awe.
Just another day at the office.
It's insane.
This place, Kittim Cave, it was profiled in the very famous book, The Hot Zone, all about the Ebola virus. And it's a beautiful place, but I can't really recommend it as a vacation hotspot.
No, that's let's leave that one out.
Yeah, I don't need to go back either. It's like I can check that one off my bucket list. Been there, crazy. Done that. Don't need to go back.
So you've described some of the scariest places. What would you say is the coolest destination you've ever traveled to?
Well, the Crystal Cave for sure is just incredibly cool. Places like New Zealand are amazing because you can do so much in such a small area. There's mountains, there's volcanoes, there's scuba diving, there's beaches, there's cosmopolitan cities. There's every kind of terrain you can imagine, extreme sports. You can go bungee jumping. You can do anything. It's awesome. Iceland as well is just a wonderful jewel. If you love the natural world, if you want to go and experience an adventure, Iceland is a great place to do it. The Antarctica, I've been there 3 times now. You can close your eyes, lift up your camera, take a series of pictures, and every single one of them is going to look like a postcard.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, Iceland is one of the places that's definitely been on my list of things to do and to see.
I cannot recommend it highly enough. I'm itching to go back to Iceland. I fell in love with that place within minutes, and I just yearn to go back.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's cowboy boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and the friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, that's fine. Just go to Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges. They ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today and get ready for this summer. If you ever thought, can I pull off a pair of cowboy boots? Then you should pull on a pair of Tecovas and you'll see. They'll become your new favorite footwear. Cowboys knew what they were doing when they invented this Western wear.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
So what about current projects? What are you working on these days? What are some things you want to tell people about?
Well, we just wrapped production on season 4 of Angry Planet for Pivot Television in the U.S. So check your local cable provider to see if you have Pivot Television. And so they're going to be airing, they tell me, at the beginning of January. or 2016. I don't know exactly when. They don't have the dates yet. But the newest five episodes will be airing in January. So watch out for that. If you live in Canada, season three is about to start airing on the Weather Network. And that's stuff that we filmed a few years ago, but it'll be new for the Weather Network. So that's all happening. So I'm basically right now I'm in between seasons. I just got back from Ireland where I got a medal from the Explorers Museum over there in Tullamore, Ireland, which was a real honor for my explorations and such. And so it's just been busy, busy, busy. Right now I'm also planning to hopefully next month go to South Georgia Island, which is basically, if you look at the map and look at the Falkland Islands, basically due east of there in the middle of the extreme southern part of the Atlantic, where the Atlantic Ocean meets the Southern Ocean. And if all goes well, I'll be there for the last 2 weeks of October, fingers crossed.
And what are you going out there for?
Filming with the Canadian Weather Network, and that is the place where those giant elephant seals, some of them weigh more than a car, and they fight on the beach, just slamming into each other, just like two semi-trucks in a head-on collision of blubber and teeth, and just an amazing spectacle of nature. They call it the Galapagos of the South because there's so much wildlife between the penguins and the elephant seals. There's just so much biomass. So I'm really hoping to go there. And that's the spot where Ernest Shackleton, the famous explorer Ernest Shackleton, one of his ships in Antarctica got trapped in the ice and was crushed. His crew was trapped in Antarctica back at the turn of the beginning of the 1907, I do believe, around there. And they had to survive in Antarctica for over a year. And Shackleton and a few of his men took a small lifeboat and they made it all the way to South Georgia Island for rescue. He didn't lose a single man. They all survived. Wow. Great tale of exploration, leadership, and survival in some of the most harsh environments on the planet. So I'm hoping to visit the site of where he was rescued as well.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny talking to you. It's going to sound dumb, but, you know, I love watching these documentaries and shows that you do, all kinds. And, you know, it's funny talking to you because it finally clicks that there's somebody out there doing it. You know, I know that sounds dumb, but it's kind of like one of those things, like when it's on TV, it's like, well, you know, things are getting filmed and whatnot, but you don't really think about people being involved and you getting on a plane and leaving your family to go do this and take your life in your hands to do it.
Yeah, in the process.
It's a realization.
Yeah, and like the hours and hours and hours you spend on a plane and the planning and preparation and dealing with insurance companies and, you know, like I had to go to do that Turkmenistan expedition into the Crater of Fire. I had to deal with Lloyd's of London because they were the only insurance company that would touch me. so there's all this stuff that goes on just to be able to show people, you know, an hour's worth of some crazy place.
Right.
You know, it can be weeks or months or sometimes years of planning and preparation and passion and dedication just to show some of these places. And it's funny because years ago I made a really important decision in my life. Basically, people wonder what the meaning of life is. Well, my advice to anyone is that it's up to you to decide what the meaning of life is. And once I understood that, I was able to embrace it. And so I made up the meaning of life for me. And that is to travel the world, document the most extreme places, and then share what I've seen with as many people as possible. And every decision that I make every day, from what I decide to do, every email I send, everything from just doing these expeditions to sharing what I've seen through television, through the web, through podcasts like yours, through all of these avenues and vehicles, all are aligned, laser focused along the lines of that sort of mission statement that I've created for myself. And it's become very effective for me. I'm completely unemployable. I don't think I can get a regular job.
No, I don't think so.
And it's weird being a full-time professional explorer and adventurer. And it started off with storm chasing, but it has expanded so much and just changed so greatly over the years to encompass anything involving the natural world. And I'm very grateful for all of the opportunities that I've been given and it's a lot of hard work being lucky.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity. I love your outlook on the meaning of life. It's a great way to think about it. It's your life. The meaning is yours.
Exactly.
You know, your meaning of life may not be my meaning of life.
And
that's an excellent way to look
exactly.
at it.
Exactly. And it shouldn't be. Everyone should be unique and clear. And as long as I'm contributing, as long as I'm growing, then I'm going to be fulfilled, right? The rents, you know, the mortgage, it gets paid one way or another. Somehow it gets paid. And that's good. But it's the fulfillingness of that particular mission. I love sharing my experiences with these places almost as much as I love going to these places. So I do a lot of talks and things at museums and schools and libraries and just places all over the world. I've done 4 TEDx talks and just getting the word out and showing people how amazing this planet is. We spend so much time going from our air-conditioned house to our air-conditioned car to our air-conditioned office. When was the last time you touched a tree? You know, we're so detached from the natural world that we sort of take it for granted and we don't think about it very often until it affects us through a power outage or, you know, the Wi-Fi is down or a big storm rolls through town. But we're part of the natural world and we're as interwoven as any other species with the natural world. And we forget that a lot of times. And I just want people to, hey, you know, step away from your computer, put down your phone and get outside. It's pretty cool out there.
And you hit the nail on the head. It is very true. And we're getting worse and worse with social media and communicating through email and really not seeing people face to face or get out in the environment. Obviously, one of the reasons we do this podcast is to inspire people to get out there. They hear awesome stories like yours and the other adventurers we've had on the show. And hopefully are kind of getting a bug to get out there and try a few of these things. Now, I'm not encouraging people to go hike up to the edge of a volcano and peer over at the lava lake below, but there's a lot of cool things that we can get out and toy with to make life awesome.
Absolutely. And it's all about stepping out of your comfort zone. And that's different for each person. Obviously, I've been doing this for so many years. My comfort zone is pretty wide, but I can get just as much of a thrill or fear or whatever you want to experience, whatever you want to call it, from doing something that you're comfortable with. What makes me afraid is different from what makes someone else afraid, right? So things that I do seem scary to some, things that you do might be scary to me. And it's all about stepping out of your own comfort zone, doing things that you've never done before. And that is how we grow as people. And that's where you get fulfilled. And that's where the magic and the juice is in life, is doing stuff that you've never done before.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I get too far along, where can people visit to find out more about you and follow you?
The easiest way is just to go over to my website, which is furiouserth.com. And there you'll find links to all my Twitter feed and Facebook and YouTube channel and all that. So it's all can be found in one place. So that's probably the easiest thing. I'm a little behind on updating my website, but I'm pretty good on social media, so I'm keeping that stuff pretty much up to date. So if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, you'll be able to stay as up to date as possible on all the adventures. And I try to send tweets out from some of the most remote places, so it's a lot of fun.
That's cool. Well, I'll definitely get those linked up in the show notes so people can go find them and see what you're up to. So aside from trying to eat a 72-ounce steak at one point.
Unsuccessfully.
Yes, I would be too. What's a good funny story from your adventures?
Oh, I remember this one time. There's been a lot of funny, bizarre stories, but this one sticks out of my mind. We were in Indonesia filming on the island of Java, and it's full of volcanoes. And we were traveling from one volcano to another, and we were driving. We come across this huge celebration in this town. And there's this people are having this feast and there's music and there's this horse that is adorned with just these wonderful just costume of sort of jewels and bright orange fluorescent oranges and pinks. And the horse is prancing and sort of dancing along with the people. It's just this amazing spectacle. So we stop and watch and we don't speak any Indonesian. And they invite us in and we sort of become the guests of honor at this giant party. And we're sort of led to believe that it's a wedding. So, okay, we're being invited to this big wedding party and they're giving us food and everyone seems to be having a good time and it's all great. And then we find out it's not a wedding party. It's a circumcision party for two of the local boys
that are
12 and 13 years old. So a little old for that. And it's like,
yikes.
Could you imagine inviting a bunch of foreigners, some strangers who just happen to be driving past, to your son's circumcision party? I just don't see that happening here in the West. It was just, it was a wonderful gesture, but it struck me a bit odd.
Wow.
Yeah, it was an awesome party.
Uncomfortable, though.
It was a bit awkward.
That's funny. So you've done a million things. Again, we've touched on, just a small percentage of what you've done. What's still on your to-do list? What are the things that you'd still like to check off before you quit doing this?
I've never experienced a Category 5 hurricane. Hurricane Katrina was the strongest that I ever encountered. It was a 5 up to a couple of hours before it made landfall, and then it weakened a bit. So I would definitely like to do that. I've never experienced a typhoon in the Pacific, which is the same as a hurricane, just in the Pacific instead of the Atlantic. But I still have yet to do that, either in Japan or Taiwan or Philippines. That is high on my sort of to-do list. There are 5 places in the world that have volcanoes with permanent lakes of lava in them. I've been to 4 out of the 5.
Wow.
So that last one is Mount Erebus in Antarctica. It's very difficult and very challenging to get to, but that is high on my list. I've never been to China or Japan or Mongolia. I want to visit all of those. I want to get to the North Pole. I want to swim in Palau's jellyfish lake. I literally have a list, like a bucket list. I don't call it a bucket list. It's too negative. I call it a life list. And it's just filled with all these things I want to accomplish and all these places I want to go. And it seems that every time I strike one item off, I tend to add 2 more to the list. So it's I actually literally do keep a list like that.
That's cool. That is very cool. Well, I hope to follow you through all of these adventures and watch you check off your list and be there as you do it.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back on maybe in a year, and we'll talk about things that have updated since then, because there's always something going on.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to have you. George, thank you so much for coming on and sharing these stories. It's been awesome to hear what your life is all about, and I really encourage people to go out and check out the documentaries that George is putting out. It's fascinating, obviously. It's just, I appreciate you taking the time to do it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Travis.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to growing the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.